Hello. 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 Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
Hi.
We're just waiting for David?
I believe so.
This is Shirley in Edmonton.
Hi, this is Miriam in Northern Virginia. How are you, Shirley?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
Hey, well, hi, everybody, and welcome. Don't let me interrupt good gossip. Go ahead. Did somebody want to make a comment?
No, we were just kind of introducing ourselves.
Oh, okay. Well, great. Remember, we're going to have an extended period, 10, 15 minutes at the end, just to, after the top of the hour, just to have conversation, to see if there are things that you still want to ask or add or that we didn't get to. I want to mention a couple of questions that I noticed that I haven't directly answered, and they relate, and they very much relate to our topic. And it's from the standpoint of change and how to really address change. If I can get you to manage the background noise, remember, if you even move or breathe, your microphone will pick it up. So do mute star six until you're ready to talk. I'll keep an open mic for a bit at the beginning just for discussion. A couple of questions relate to how can I convince people of the benefits of wellness and wellness coaching if they're skeptic? And how can I get someone to really change their mind about the possibility of coaching? Can I just give them information? So here's my best answer. To not try to convince or sell or persuade someone, instead of giving information or teaching, offer a sample session. It's about the client. The best way to illustrate the advantage, the benefit of coaching is to show rather than tell. If you tell, as we've discussed before, someone is going to compare without maybe even being conscious of it, the information that you provide with the information that's already an anatomical reality in their brain, and they're going to see if they agree. If they do, they'll find a way to confirm. If they don't, they'll find a way to refute it. So I would suggest at that point saying, I think the best way to get an idea of what it would be or what the possibilities can be for you is to do a complimentary sample session. Would you like to schedule a 20-minute conversation? And then when they do say yes, say, I think it'll give us the best idea of working together if you have a specific topic or focus and an idea of where you'd like us to get to. Because think about how that has it begin before it happens. It happens when somebody calls you, but it begins because they're already thinking about what they're going to do. You've begun a process. And you guys, in CTA at least, you know the secret. You know that your coach is going to ask you the first two questions in sequence. What would you like us to focus on? Where would you like to get to? At least if you want to get certified, you know the coach is going to ask you that. And the coach is going to ask the same two questions at the end of these. That, you know, how would you summarize what you've gleaned from this section? And then what do you commit to before we meet again? So think about how you're using the simple coaching model to illustrate the benefit. And if they happen to focus on a topic of wellness, that's great, bonus. But remember, wellness is a concept. It's like a goal. So you are not going to benefit someone by looking at education, training, information, data. You're going to help someone look at how they began with what they want to focus on and develop that, because that's the point of reference for that person, is their story, and you're helping them develop their story. We're going to look at the last two steps of the roadmap system in this seminar. And again, the roadmap system is simply a macro system to deconstruct the algorithms of how someone puts together their story in order to look at it together. Now, you'd never talk to a client the way I'm talking to you guys, but you would look at how they're creating their story to look at where they want to change, what they want to do, what's the next step. So that's all we need to focus on, is the choice architecture of this moment. So there are some other questions, and we'll get to that. I'll save a few minutes at the end and then our additional time. But anything else right now? Any other things to add or ask? Anyone want to add anything to the hopper based on what questions or things to focus on based on what you've heard in the first three seminars? Because that's a lot of information. I prefer a more seminar-type discussion, but there's so much I want you to know that I know I've compressed a lot, and that's why I do the outline in the workbook, so that you can have a way to sort of keep up and track and apply it to you. But anything else from anyone you want to add or ask? Remember, your shuffling of paper is even picked up. Is someone getting ready to talk?
Hi, Dave. It's Carlene.
Oh, welcome. Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah, my question, it's a little bit, just based on what you just said, I totally agree that we wouldn't talk that way to a client, but I'm not 100%, like some of my clients are coaches as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, can you just define what that boundary is? Why wouldn't we talk like that to a client? Like, what exactly is the reason? I know intuitively not to, but I don't.
Because,
understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked that. Now, the framework makes some difference. Is that client, who is also a coach, coming to you for their own reasons for coaching, or are they coming to you to help them as a mentor coach for their practice, to jumpstart their practice, to look at applying some things and doing that? You know, I've experienced both as a client. When I was going through training, I had a mentor coach, and she helped me sort of clean up my therapy language and did all kinds of stuff and would make comments in addition to, for me personally, for my story, for my coaching story. So the purpose and the framework make a difference. So if you're working with a coach who also is using you as a mentor coach to help you with their practice, then you might do both. You might make, here's a sidebar comment for coaching application, and then you can reference that where you might not do that with a client. But with a client who's not a coach, I'll still add stories or studies just to illustrate or amplify something, because it often brings it home, because that's how we understand, that's how we remember things, is with a story. And our brains are hardwired to seek stories. And the beginning, middle, and end, the challenge, the development, the resolution, that's what keeps someone engaged, because they're trying to create a story, and you are co-creating one with them as the protagonist. Now, that protagonist may have difficulty dealing with their partner at times, or they may use something that will be applicable to certain clients at certain points. So that's just a judgment call in terms of application. So, Carlene, mm-hmm. does that begin to answer your question?
It does. Thank you. Yeah,
great
it.
Question. Others? Anything else? Okay, we will move into our topic and then hang around if you'd like to have a fireside chat. Now, we're beyond fireplaces in Houston. Many of you have heard me say we have two seasons here, hot and not, and we've definitely moved into hot. So, but we'll still have a chat. So hold on. I'll put us in lecture mode. Okay, we've discussed the power of story, the concept of creating your own wellness story. We've looked together at how different this notion of creating your own story is from fitting into someone else's protocol, just adding information or adding some kind of diet plan or exercise program that may be a system but isn't the system that's generated from and with the client. So we discussed the first five steps in the roadmap for a new wellness story. Recognize authorship. Own your story, assess the plot and storylines, decide what to change, and map changes. Now, we're going to discuss this seminar, steps 6 and 7, about how to create new wellness experiences and identity. So, step 6, author new experiences. This is where we put it into action. We trust our stories. They're our reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. So we have to change one or the other to restore that balance, to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we change the way we see reality. And there are a lot of other possibilities to rationalize, to bargain with yourself, you know, to say, well, you know, I didn't start today as a thought, but I'll really get after it next Tuesday. Now, we've considered if your wellness story doesn't allow you to do certain things, if there are limiting contingencies, if your story is that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early or comfortably on time. If your story says you don't know how to work out or don't have time, you'll live out this assumption. At first, the idea of change will create excitement. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, the trepidation, the uncertainty, because you're doing something other than what your brain predicts and has been hardwired for and what your software program accepts as a way to go because you know how it's going to end. Then expansion, and then finally, mastery. So, here are some AAA principles of change to author a new story. So this is the sixth step, authoring a new story, creating that new story. The three principles, awareness, acceptance, and action. So let's apply that now. You're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component of that story, what are the results? It doesn't matter what your intention is. One of the 48 laws of power is intention doesn't matter. It's what you do. Honestly assess each of these storylines with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, and spirit. Maybe for each of those three components, a yes or no. Your business and career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask someone what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapter or chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams, yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns, health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is. Pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. I screen for heirs and heiresses, so I'll make sure that this statement is true. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is time, money, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to provide in some way. You'll still have to pay in some way. If you incur debt, for example, in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you pay triple for it. You pay because your brain immediately, you can't fool your brain. The error detection mechanism in your brain recognizes you don't have the money. You may bargain with yourself and say, I'll pay it next month, but that's additional work. Then you have to pay interest, and then you have to rectify that. It's triple work. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think you're each going to make such a difference in so many lives. It makes it easy to pay, and I don't even consider it paying. This is a purpose, a contribution. The price is whatever you need to give in order to give and generate exactly what you want. Two. Of the AAA principle. You're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive. It takes the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power of focus to your story and belief system that fulfills it, and it assumes its own momentum. Now, remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the author of it. You're the creator of it. So here's a short list of some things. When you focus on what you don't want or try to avoid what you don't want, when you play not to lose, we'll come back to that in the discussion. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want specifically. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? Remember back in the day before, you know. The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So a goal is analogous roughly to MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, you make a map, and you determine the time. A caveat. To know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. And here's something that's really important. This was passed on to me by an old codger alcohol treatment counselor on one of my services way back in the day, and he gave me permission to use it, and I have. He said, you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And think of the wisdom. That's the cleaned up version, by the way. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is engagement. It's kind of like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. So whatever you focus on, you get. So make sure it's positive and what you want rather than avoiding something negative. And here's a coaching important framing. Most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? You've probably heard of this. In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life in business. The other 80 to 85% had not. 5 decades later, those 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. Another more recent study, same, and the people from Dartmouth didn't read this study. Same study from Dartmouth, 90 to 92% of those who had specific goals ended up with most of the asset, with that amount of assets after 25 years. So here's a principle. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. You can't begin with motivation. That's not enough. You don't even need motivation. But when you get focused on the goal, the closer you get to the goal, the more of the activation of your brain to bring that closure. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and energy. So here's an exercise I want to highlight here. 11 steps to ignite success. That begins on page 3.6. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time. Where and when? The travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will get to 185 pounds by September 1st. You've got to add the year 2022. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I'm going to set up an automatic withdrawal to pay myself first from my checking account the first day of every month of $300 to go to my retirement fund. A good decision you only have to make once. That's a goal. Now, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, create incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every October writing in a Creole cottage in the French Quarter. But each of you guys are going to have to substitute your own because I'm living into mine. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. That hardwires the goal like a vision. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. This is the essence of the beginning of a system. When your client hangs up the phone from talking to you, do they know what to do next? Do they know what that first step is? Do they know how to focus on the system that you've created and how to expand that? For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do now that will give you some traction. Here's a story some of you have definitely heard before. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. He had an artificial leg, so his running style was a shuffle and a hop, but he still managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was interviewed immediately after the race and asked, how did he keep himself going when he was exhausted and challenged? And he looked at the interviewer and simply said, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. Now, he happened to know where they ended. They ended at the end of the Marathon of Hope, but that was his simple, what's the next step approach. Just kept going to the next telephone pole. So, divide up your work, focus on, and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Here's another kind of example. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything just seemed curiously out of focus. I met with him each week, and I'd glance at the photograph. Finally, toward the end of the year, I mustered the courage and asked him about it. He said, well, look carefully, Dave. What do you see? Well, I went to the picture. I walked to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help. I said, Steve, the only thing I noticed, there's only one branch of one tree in focus in this entire picture. He said, that's exactly why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing that you can have in focus and see clearly, which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes for most simple cause and effect things 20 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in the brain to make it permanent by consistently repeating it. So write your own new story consistently for it to become the default mode. Overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, but on little things. You plan to run 30 minutes on the treadmill, but after 10 you get off, convinced you're a little stiff today. Well, it's one small choice, no big deal. You resolve to cut empty calories and then grab 5 peanut M&Ms from the candy bowl, not really thinking about the choice because no single M&M, not even 5, has ever caused anybody diabetes. But wellness is the cumulative result of thousands of such choices, seemingly innocuous and rationalized away, or justified into oblivion. Each time, each single time you compromise, it makes it just a little bit easier to do the next time. If you're interested, I'll tell you a story about my addiction to Russell Stover chocolate-covered cherries and how I handle that in our discussion. If you're not interested, don't mention it, and I will understand. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, that's so simple. Good parents have known that for centuries. Sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. But here's the caveat. With an infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old. That's something that we focus on in coaching, but we may forget about how important unlearning is at the same time as learning, because learning has to create new space and eclipse unlearning. So there are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate change and ensure transformation. And that's part of what we've been talking about for this time together. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or your partner, ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, would you rate the quality of our relationship? Now, you can get direct feedback doing that. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, how can I get to 10? But ask people you know are going to give you honest feedback. Now, here's a brief story. A tribe in southern Africa called the Bibimba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that may impinge on or even assault the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he's important to the life of the village. It frames everything that they say in a positive way. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered, grounded, and reconnect with our true essence. Here's something that can be important. Find people who are already successfully doing what you want to do and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your own version of it. This is simply a way to gather information, not a way to copy. Ask, learn, question, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. Here's an interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time, seasoned salespeople never ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve their client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They responded to her after reading the report in two ways. This is the most amazing report and summary. How did you come up with these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, you may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into a shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. There's a review of goal setting on page 3.5 of your workbook. It was initiated by the founder of executive coaching in this country, Marshall Goldsmith. Looked at it in another way, it can be interpreted as success insurance. To look at why people give up on their goals, to learn how effective goal setting can be to ensure long-term achievement. 10, you're writing your own story, take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There already at that time was one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. If you've been to Carmel, you'd marvel at how that low a ratio is there, because every chiropractor would probably want. So he went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? As he was leaving, he added, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500, and in his first year, he netted over $1 million. And that was back in the time when $1 million was real money. This was in the late 90s. 11, you're rewriting your own story. It's never too late to start. So don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beyond was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah. I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, conventional wisdom. But nobody told Cliff this. So when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. And you know, they initially were all asleep, and they couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to keep running. He shuffled along for over 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. Now, we each have beliefs that may limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity and the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Stories give birth to possibilities. Stories are a way we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. It's the bedrock of our identity, the story we have about ourselves. Your story is yourself, your life. It will be what survives you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. Now, let's talk about step 7, program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Let's talk just a minute, a brief review about operating systems. Remember, we talked to that. We now know from neuroscience that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. We have the patterns that are already in our brain for attachment, emotional, other kinds of responses, relational, as well as about ourselves. Now, that means, and this is important in coaching, we may construct or create 2 stories simultaneously. The surface story that we run our lives with, our conscious intentions and aspirations. And this can be, this is what I want from life, this is what I believe. Yet, this is only a process over 5 or 10% of our story. Consider at the same time the unconscious story that ghostwrites behavior, sometimes in a different direction, and this is where we come in as coaches, than conscious intention. When the surface story and the shadow story go in opposite directions, that's what we are paid to help someone address, understand, and address. Here's how that can sound. I can't get what I want. System keeps me from getting what I need. I don't have what it takes. So many compromises occur when the two stories are written simultaneously. I want to claim my freedom and become totally my own person. But the shadow story, my partner acts like I'm taking it away from him or her when I'm self-sufficient. So think about, look in the workbook to look at your mission statement. You've probably been familiar with the mission statement of a business. The mission statement contains four elements: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Think about creating a personal mission statement. What's your purpose? What are you meant to do? This is the compass to guide your life and your wellness story to personal fulfillment. That mission statement can help you look at that and develop more specifically your own. Write yours down. Read it every day. Incorporate it into your wellness story. Now, when we're looking at programming a new identity, we want to listen for the patterns that are already there. The new behavior is a new pattern that's introduced when someone does something different. What's going to make it permanent versus what's going to make it fade as soon as someone's finished doing it or with the next day? The answer is, if it's incorporated into their working model, their concept of how and who they are, their identity. So this is why, for example, someone may lose a bunch of weight even if they lose their goal weight of 30 pounds. Most people gain back that weight. Over 90% of people will gain back that weight and then add a pound or two. I want to talk about the gaining back part. Why is that? I believe it's because they didn't incorporate the change into the foundation of their identity, their body image. They then lived behaviorally and back into that existing body image where they left off at the beginning of the diet. So the changes, and this is what we do all the time as coaches, we help someone look at and incorporate the changes, the experiences they're having as part of a newly evolving awareness and sense of self. And that's something we do every time. This is not one aha moment, but it's something we reflect on and highlight in an ongoing way. And we can talk more about that in the discussion if you're interested. So this is something that can be also on your own or on the client's own, prompted by self-reflection, having a 2-minute mindfulness meditation of getting grounded and centered, reflecting on their progress. You're doing this each time you have a session. At the end, you're asking the client to summarize in their own words, in a succinct way, what the most important thing they're taking away from this session, and then how can they begin to put into action a way to make the next step or steps toward their goal. So you're helping them develop self-empathy, reflection, and being able to assess this, because soon enough they'll be doing it on their own. You're helping them develop a model of how to do this. So identity is a process as well as the content that's there. You know, an example where the two kind of combine. You know, I'll make it personal. When I began a collaboration with Henry Lodge Jr., the author of Younger Next Year and the companion book Younger Next Year for Women, I changed my workout from 3 to 4 times a week to 6 times a week, and more aligned with his suggested research. Ultimately, very quickly, actually, if I don't do that, it's like something's missing. It's not something I debate about. It's simply part of my system. It's 2 o'clock every day. Nothing interferes with that. It's like he gave the great analogy. It's like getting up and going to work. You don't debate about it. You don't. It's just something you do. So here's something that can be important in terms of choice enhancement. Increased tension produces emotional regression. Stress can move someone into a more emotional pattern characteristic of an earlier age or just with less cognitive reserve or grasp. Increased emotion narrows perspective to create at times tunnel vision. Now, paradoxically, attempting to use reason and logic with someone who's escalated usually makes them more torqued up and less able to access reason. And stress derails balanced big picture thinking to focus on the more recent, the recency effect, and the more emotionally charged event. So, for each of these three reasons, the first thing we need to do with a client, especially if they have any emotional trauma, is to resonate empathically with their experience to help them get grounded and centered. State always comes before strategy and story. This is a way that they have then of being resonant and reliant on their own ability to get grounded and centered before they make a decision or even before they proceed. When you're relaxed and centered, you have the greatest access to all of your states of mind, to all the information you possess, important in every coaching session, especially when it begins with some kind of upset or some kind of emotional amalgamation in what they're talking about. Now, here's how a Buddhist teaching puts it. Return to the earth now if your mind is troubled and your heart is uncertain, for it's by returning to the beginning that we can clearly see the path. Return to the earth, how better can you use the metaphor of getting grounded and centered, which isn't really a metaphor. Now, here's just a note about change and transition in terms of this step. The brain's a very efficient machine. It does not waste energy. Simplicity is to take the path of least resistance, to use neurons already familiar with a task. So the brain inclines toward repeating the old story. Now, to think creatively or differently, new neural pathways need to be developed outside the usual cycle of experience. Stimulation, that's what we're paid to do. A new insight, a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst, a novel stimulus, new information, a new context, usually a question, and especially a question that converts a period into a comma. Well, let's look at that. Or what else? What do you think about that? The change is the event, the situation. You change your behavior, move to a new city, have a baby, take a job. As we focus on change, we address usually the rituals of change, the work tools, the smart goals. The transition, though, is the internal process. The story of change, a shift in orientation, even self-definition. transition is attention to the seasonal cycles as well as the daily weather. As you create change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter. This is the unlearning, and evolve into your new story. This is the P of the roadmap. Program new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. And again, Jung said, sometimes the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. So, as accountability partner, we may help someone consider a commitment device. We help our kids do this. A piggy bank, it's a commitment device to counter impulsive decision. We create plans and strategies with our clients. Here are the most frequent mistakes made in writing a new wellness story. One, not knowing that you don't know. Now, how can somebody know they don't know something? We believe we know, which may blind us to our ignorance. This, in turn, causes us to be blind to signs that we may be mistaken. Now, to know to ask is half the answer. Two, stopping at the first right answer. When we're solving problems or writing a new story, we may stop at the first reasonable action. While this may be a correct strategy, it stops us from considering other right answers, other correct strategies that could be more effective. There's a whole book now that studies optimal stopping. When in decision-making processes is optimum stopping? So ask yourself, and then what? What else? Now, I'm going to introduce number three with this brief quiz. Five frogs sat on a log. They all considered their options. Four discussed strategy and then decided they would jump off, developed a plan for this. So, how many were left on the log? Well, five were left. They planned, they decided, but they didn't commit to act. Number three is either a bad plan or procrastination. Let's talk about procrastination. I'm talking about some of the broad themes here, the big patterns. Putting off an exercise program, not paying yourself first, not saving for emergencies, not saving for retirement, taking care of others but not yourself. Most of us live our lives as though there were an unlimited amount of time left. We have little sense of urgency, which can contribute to a lack of focus. Now, when the two-minute warning sounds in football, a team sometimes achieves more in the final 2 minutes than they did in the previous 28. The Texans are an exception, but never mind. This imminent deadline, a limited, finite amount of time to accomplish goals, focuses attention and increases effort. In our lives, we only rarely have a two-minute warning. We play as if the notion of finite time is only an abstraction, something we acknowledge but may not internalize. Life is finite. It's just that the game clock is invisible. Four, ineffective energy management. Managing energy is a key to success. This begins with knowing your strengths, limitations, your biological cycles, when you perform best, and it finds its way to reality in a system and then ultimately a focus. So, know how to enter and exit various states of mind. What works best for particular tasks? For example, writing and editing, two totally different states of mind, to be done at different times. They involve different parts of the brain. Cluster activities that require the same state of mind. This is useful, as well as a number of other things that relate to this, in working with a client who has attention deficit challenges. Identify what specifically enhances energy, maybe anticipation, creativity, pleasure, meditation, prayer. Identify what depletes energy, toxic people or situations, negative mindset, lack of focus. The fifth mistake, ambiguity. If you're unclear about what options are available and don't know what it would be like to pursue them, since you haven't done it before, this uncertainty can add to decision paralysis. What looks like resistance may be simply a lack of clarity. This is important. If you think about your client being resistant, simply ask, do you know what the next step is? People are more likely to change when new behavior is crystal clear, not vague or absent or abstract or simply a goal. Having a goal doesn't tell you what the map is. It doesn't tell you what the next step is. It doesn't help you measure successive approximation to that goal. Act, eat healthier, save for the future. Where do you begin with that? Those are good ideas. When you want to affect change, you need to co-create a script for specific behaviors with your client. 6, too many choices. There are some studies that show how when somebody is inundated with too many choices, they resort to the default mode of doing nothing. The classic study, and you've probably heard me mention this before, in gourmet grocery stores and successive weekends, there were tastings of, in the original one, there were tastings of 6 jams and alternate weekends of 20 jams. Now, when the 20 jams were tasted, so there were a lot more samples going out, but when there were 20 jams as opposed to 6, there was 1/10 the amount of purchase. When people only sampled 6 jams, they purchased at 10 times the rate when there were too many choices. You know, think about how when you have so many choices, you just, you know, throw up your hands or decide to take a nap and I'll deal with it tomorrow. Too many choices is important because you want to help someone create from their own initiative, their own story, their choices, and then decide what they want to do. Lack of persistence. Here's what Ross Perot said about that. Most people give up when they're about to achieve success. They quit on the 1-yard line. So this is not the initiation of a new order of things or the challenging, courageous part to initiate the, but the willingness to stay the course. And 8, not following success trails. Find what you want to do. Create a plan for that. Now, I want to add something to close on. One is a final word from 3 perspectives: cells, mind and brain, and story. Now, first, about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program, in many instances, how active our genes will be. There's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ of the body, some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, the study of epigenetics, including our behavior, are reliant on each other. What we do as well as what we eat can turn genes on or turn them off. Let me give you a simple example. Genes cannot operate independently of that environment, the internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions all interact. For example, when you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6 which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among all other things, stabilizes mood. So I hear Eric saying, I've got to eat some broccoli as soon as this You don't have to wait, my man. Your true story. Now, a final word here. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. A small boy approached Walt Disney to ask him, "How can I be like you one day?" And Disney took this really seriously, and he thought for a moment. He held up his finger to let the boy know he was thinking and he was going to respond. Finally, he said four words: think, believe, dream, dare. And remember the most important lesson from everything I believe I've said during our time together in these four seminars. Just keep going to the next telephone pole. Now, it's been a privilege to be with you these four seminars. I've learned a lot. I really appreciate all the responses that have come in. And I hope you have benefited and that it met your expectations. Thank you for your energy and presence, and I hope we'll have an opportunity to cross paths and collaborate again. Remember, I'm going off of lecture mode to keep manage the background noise, and we'll have a discussion. I'm interested in your thoughts and questions. So we're in discussion mode now. Thoughts, questions, things you'd like to talk about briefly. I have a couple of things. Yeah, go ahead.
It's Eric again.
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. How did you know I hated broccoli?
Just one of them energy things.
I do, as a matter of fact. But I must, as I've reached a certain age, I do eat more of it. I had to chime in when I heard you say that.
How did I know that, too? Go ahead. Great to have you.
Good to have
any
you.
Thoughts
good
or questions you wanted to add?
Not just yet. I'm formulating.
Okay. Okay, all right, great.
Developing.
Okay, so all right, thanks. Oh, I meant to mention, there are two or three of you that have asked about, you must have tripped on it on my website. I will send this to each of you for the couple of questions that you've asked about, a little bit more detail about the licensed specialty certified training for a new wellness story. I'll send that to you to see if that might be of interest to you, because I don't want to spend any time here talking about it, but I wanted to go back to some questions. If anybody has anything, jump in. There are a couple of questions that I wanted to get to. How do I get someone with many years of excuses to really change her mindset so she'll be able to become healthy and ward off diabetes? Now, this is a very specific question, and I think, and it relates to a question about someone persisting with negative things, with problems, and always coming back to that. So the first thing I believe would be to ask a question. Because when you ask a question, and you guys know this, when you ask a question, you engage someone to respond. When you ask a question and they respond, there's no opposition to that because there's nothing to oppose. And this, you've heard me say before, this is the hardest thing to help someone, for example, professional sports coaches. They know exactly what every player on that field, on that court, need to do. We've talked about this before. The hardest thing is to get them not to tell the person what to do. And the simplest way is, well, is it working? Well, no, not really. Well, let's try something different. Ask a question, because that engages the participation. So what you want to do is to engage someone in a reframed way about what's the greatest challenge that you have with that? Well, I just keep going back to the negative things. Well, here's a way. There are three principles, and then I'm going to tell you, you know, the three-step secret, okay, that's even shorter and more to the point than the roadmap. I alluded to appreciative inquiry. That's a whole body of work that I believe we can use in coaching that's not nearly applied enough. An example is Dr. David Copperwriter has studied organizations and asked from the standpoint of consulting to ask about a problem, to ask a consultative question of the group, what's the greatest, what's the problem, and then they engage in a problem mindset. When he engages a matched group of organizations with a different question, a coaching question basically, what's the greatest challenge here? A very different mindset is booted up. So this is analogous to conversational intelligence, which we know now from neuroscience that the first few words of a conversation boots up a particular mindset in the listener. When you ask or engage in a collaborative way, it boots up a mindset that is collaborative, that's mediated by oxytocin, the neurochemical system of bonding, of connection. When you began and the first few words are heard or perceived even as judgmental or critical or just challenging, and trust is a question, a totally different neurochemical system mediated by cortisol and epinephrine, so that the mindset is one more of protection, one more of feeling challenged. A different mindset just in the first few words of what you say. So that's also why we ask a question. Now, here's the three-step secret. And this gets to a couple of other questions about somebody who always returns to negative self-talk, to a negative focus. And that negative self-talk is there. It's been there probably for a lifetime. Think about how when you do negative self-talk, think about the last time you've done negative self-talk. I can't do that. What's the age of that conversation? I'll bet it goes all the way back to the first memories, maybe single-digit years, because those negative thought loops, that's in the time capsule. That's not going to change. You can't therapize, you can't counsel, you can't coach your way out of a time capsule, but you can engage someone to look at reframing that. So here's self-directed neuroplasticity. This is an amalgamation from Jeffrey Schwartz, a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA, who was a guest of mine in a mastermind group. Self-directed neuroplasticity is simply three steps. Recognize an error message from the brain. Whatever that negative thing is, whatever the self-limiting thoughts are, recognize it's an error message from your brain, because your brain's trying to protect you from getting screwed, from doing something negative and having a failure. But that's hardwired. So your brain's doing its job description, automatically booting up what's hardwired. And that negative self-talk is that. So recognize it's an error message from your brain, so you can stop it before you even finish that sentence, to then reframe it, to look at what's the challenge here, what's the opportunity. Exactly what we ask in coaching, and what we ask in coaching, which is why one of the reasons I ask for permission to interrupt somebody, to ask what's the challenge, and then to refocus on what's a systematic way, what's the next step for that challenge. So self-directed neuroplasticity, that means you can change your brain and the hardwiring of your brain with these three steps. Recognize the error message, reframe, and refocus, the three R's. And when you do that, when you put that into action with a client, it can reverse a lifetime of getting to a point and feeling at a dead end, the negative thought loops. Thoughts or questions? I hear a little talk in the background. Anything you want to say out loud, or do you need to mute? Any questions or thoughts so far? I'm interested in what you guys think, and I appreciate all the questions you've sent in, but I want to go to live time for thoughts or questions or clarification.
Thank you, Dave. It's Andrew from Sydney here.
Welcome, Andrew. What's our weather going to be like in the U.S. tomorrow? You know 18 hours in advance. What are we expecting?
Yes, after a bit of a cold snap, but you're going to have a beautiful, bright blue skies, warm days and cool nights. It's on its way.
That's great. I'm not teasing. I had a client in Australia. He always was right. I mean, 100% of the time, he knew exactly what the weather was going to be the next day. And then he kind of realized it and told me. And I kept trying. He was always right. So go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Your mirror neurons are finely tuned, Dave. So you just gave us a three-step process and about the recognize, reframe, and refocus, which is a lovely addition to the resistant clients. And when you ask the question, do you know what the next step is? And I think it's a lovely way to bring it all together. Thank you, Dave.
That's great. Thank you, Andrew. And that's something I want to highlight, that the whole idea of mirror neurons is as recent as 1996 in Parma, Italy, when researchers in a lab there recognized that when a monkey saw a fellow monkey have a stimulus such as pain, there was no wiring, there was only the observation. The exact point in the observer's brain fired at the same time that the monkey who was having that stimulus. And the whole idea, the notion of the function of mirror neurons, it's really more of a function than a specific location, was introduced. And this is the basis of an empathic resonance, because when we're grounded and centered, we can fully attune to the client to have a read of what their response is. And the reason I'm mentioning this, this is absolutely as accurate and complete when doing work by telephone as it is in person or video conferencing. I believe at times it's a little greater when there's not the visual distraction. But if you learn to not be misled or distracted by the visual, that this is the basis of an empathic resonance, to resonate with the experience, not just the feeling, but the whole experience, the way of organizing, the style of a client, so that it can more accurately help us be attuned to that person, their system, their way of their style, their work performance, their whole neuro-linguistic programming preferences, that can all inform our empathy. So I think that's a really important point about that, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a really important thing that we do in coaching.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Dave.
Super.
Yeah, finishing out there. Chipmunk the chipmunk.
Okay. Okay. Terrific. Okay, who else? What else?
David, it's Shirley from Edmonton. I have a question, please.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm just fine, and I wish I was in Houston, because it's definitely not hot here.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm still looking at snow on the ground. Anyway, David, will the recordings for these four sessions be available for the next week, what's the plan for?
They will definitely be up, and they should be up for a few months. I don't think there's a time frame. I don't think it'll be past a year, but they'll be up for 2 or 3 months, at least a quarter. I'll have to check on that. I should know the answer, but I don't. But yeah, they definitely.
Okay,
will.
Thanks.
And they'll be posted
by
tomorrow, less than 24 hours. And remember to be sure also to download the workbook and the outline, because that'll help you keep track of it better, hopefully.
Yeah, I have all of that. It's just I wanted to revisit. I wanted to revisit the webinars actually, just because the seminars here. Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. This has been great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Who else and what else? What else would you like to talk about?
Hi, David.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I'm going to come back to who also spoke at the same time. But go ahead.
I'm Devani from Washington, D.C., and
welcome.
Cherry blossoms are flying all over the place because of the rain.
Yeah,
the rain.
Okay. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you a little more about mistakes in writing our stories. Two things caught my mind. You said the stopping function, that we have to make sure that we don't stop too soon, because if we stop too soon, we may miss a few of the options that are available. But then later on, you said that if we have too many options, we may end up doing nothing. So how do we find the balance with that so we don't get too, one doesn't get too carried away when you're coaching someone?
Well, those sound similar, but they're really two different things. The number of options is what can be overwhelming, because if you don't have a system and a way to choose among them, then you're going to narrow it down. For example, for something, let me give you a practical example. For something that there is not exactly an anchor for, something you don't have an idea of how much time or what it's worth, often that's coaching fees. And someone doesn't have an, it's not like, you know, it's not like a carton of milk. That somebody in New York and somebody in Andrew in Australia, there's going to be a difference, but you got an anchor. Now, for something like a coaching fee or a program that you don't have an exact apples-to-apples comparison, the anchor is the first thing that's offered. If you offer too many things, then somebody's going to get overwhelmed and say, I'm not going to make a decision. I'm just going to do. Now, but if you offer an option, and I don't recommend this, by the way, but if you offer an option of three different things,
mm-hmm.
neuromarketing tells us that more than 80% of the time, people are going to choose the middle one. So this is something that I would say, for coaching, for this example, I wouldn't do any of those. I would simply make a recommendation for professional coaching services and what your structure and your fee is at the end of a brief consultation or a sample session. So that's tell me again the first part of your question and how you related those two about the options.
So you were saying that when we begin to rewrite our stories, that we want to be clear that we don't make the mistake of stopping too quickly before we begin to look at weight.
Okay, yeah, I got the relationship now. Stopping too quickly would be simply stopping at the first good option. So that may be the right choice, but it may preclude a better option. So often it's helpful for something like that. There are few true emergencies in life. I mean, you know, even when I practiced psychiatry, I didn't do emergencies. I didn't have patients who had emergencies. My kid's bleeding, that was an emergency, but that's few and far between. A decision is not an emergency. So here's one way to think about it. If you come to a conclusion, it's going to be the same good decision if it's a good decision tomorrow morning, and you've gone through some state changes to say, well, I'm going to sleep on that because that's a decision. Then you come to another decision to the next morning. And I stole this one from my wife. When her two kids, my two stepkids, either one would say, I really need an answer right now. She would say, well, if I have to answer right now, the answer is no. Now, I'll be willing to think about it, and I'll get back to you. You pick. Guess what?
That's
the distinction that I have in mind, which is, you guys know now, I'm making all this up as I go along. That's what I have in mind about too many choices versus stopping at the first. I forgot the title of that book, but it's a fascinating book. I listened to it twice on audio. I'll send you guys the title of that. I'm not highly recommending it. I'm just saying that process is studied very well. And it's really interesting work to look at how you take significant research and put it into practical wisdom about deciding things, especially if you're, like, looking for apartments, for example. They give that example. So any other questions or thoughts that any of you have or things that you'd like to talk a little bit more about? Oh, there was another person who spoke. I'm sorry, I was coming back to you. Would you do your question or your input now, please?
Sure. Hi, Dave. It's Carlene.
Yeah.
Also from Edmonton. I guess Edmonton's a lot to
Okay.
I really appreciate the statement, state always comes before strategy or story. And I have used that with some clients, and it's been very effective. Would you ever recommend doing something with that, say for a webinar or a bigger audience, especially if the audience, you haven't worked directly with them before? Or do you think the story should proceed in a case like that?
Are you asking about the application in terms of how you talk to clients, or an offering that you have, or if there's an offering that I have that elaborates about that? Could you say a little
more about that? Well, yeah. So state always comes before strategy or story. So I know that this is true working one-on-one with clients.
Okay.
I wonder if that can be applied to other situations, such as, say, presenting for a webinar or presenting.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I'll tell you my thoughts in 35 minutes or less. There's a free webinar at the very bottom of my homepage on Master States of Mind. You may be familiar with it, but this is exactly what I address in that webinar, of looking at how, as coaches, we can help someone regulate a state of mind, which is an essential aspect of creating a story, of being able to regulate first and then create, you know, strategy and story. Self-regulation is probably one of the most effective things that we can possibly learn or be of help to our clients about.
Great. Thank you.
So, yeah. It's a free webinar, 35 minutes. And I put it there because I was, you know, just sending it to people, and I didn't want to do that anymore, so I asked my web guy, just put it up there and make it free, so it's easy. So basically what we've talked about is it's fairly quick and easy to change your mind, but to change your brain is a lot more work. That's exactly what we specialize in. And usually most effective way is to create a map and apply a stepwise system. And then we repeat that new pattern, and over a period of time, it rewires our brain. So this is an essence of what we've been talking about. So, again, I know I'm over what I mentioned. I appreciate all of your input and energy, and I'm very grateful for your positive responses. Thank you very much. And I hope this was beneficial, and I hope we'll cross paths again. If I can help you in any way, let me know. But thanks very much for all your input and exchange throughout this time. Thanks very, very much. Take good care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you guys.